Hi, I'm Josh Flitter.
Hi, I'm Julia Falcone.
We're cousins.
I'm a scientist.
I am not.
This is a podcast about space.
And comedy. We're doing this because I've always been curious about space.
And you don't know shit about space.
But I do know shit about comedy.
Welcome to the Cousin Paradox. All right. Well, I'm so glad we're doing this.
Yeah, me too. This is awesome. As faux as it feels to, just for everyone, we just did the intro, did the little jingle, and now we're like, this is our first episode doing this. So we're like, okay, now we're gonna start talking like normal people.
Yeah, now we're gonna talk like we actually know each other and have known each other our whole lives.
I think we have though.
I've known you my whole life, but there were a few years where I didn't know you.
That's actually a really good point. I hadn't thought about it like that.
So if you really think about it, I feel like I'm the better cousin because you've been a more constant presence in my life than I have been in your life.
Kind of like a really shitty way of putting it, but yeah, like
yes,
I think
yeah.
There is no other way of saying it. You are the better cousin, like by default. I had no choice.
Yeah. It's by default, but it is also your fault.
Right. It's also our parents' faults for having us at different times. And well, so that's a good segue into how we're related. My mother and your father are brother and sister.
Wow. And as the definition of cousin would have it.
Yes. So everyone knows now. Everyone that didn't know or that knows us separately but doesn't know us together, that's how we're related.
But... yeah, that. So yeah, my name is Julia Falcone, and
mine is Josh Flitter, which is not the same last name, but it was my mom's OG last name is your last name.
Yes, and yeah, this is something that we have been talking about doing for years.
Yeah,
We
it was brought up I think 2 or 3 years ago. And it just was sort of like a casual, like, yeah, this could be a fun idea. Because I have always been really curious. I mean, we've talked, I've reached out to you in the past, just like randomly text you, be like, hey,
SpaceX.
Like, this is a really cool, I texted you about SpaceX. I was like, what, this launch that's happening today, I think it's really cool, but what is the significance of it? Because I have no idea.
Yeah.
And you're like explaining the whole thing in full detail over text. And I'm like, okay, thanks.
Yeah, I'm sending you like essays over text.
Yeah,
like. And if you look at the angular momentum, you'll see that it actually makes a lot of sense.
And I'm like, rocket go.
I
think it's cool.
Yeah, this is awesome. And then, we basically were like, yeah, we should start a podcast as people do.
As people do.
And then nothing happened as people do.
Right.
For a really long time. And then. Yeah. Last month I went to go see the new movie Driveaway Dolls, directed by Ethan Coen, and who would show up at the very end stealing the very last shot but your enormous face.
Stupid, dumb, enormous face closes out the movie.
And
spoilers for people, I'm not going to tell you what it is. You have to go watch the movie, or I think it's now you can rent it or what have you. My stupid, dumb, giant head is the final frame of the movie.
Which is insane.
Yeah.
So that was, first of all, such a blast. Driveaway Dolls is a fantastic movie. Everyone should see it.
Thank you for plugging it so I don't have to be the one that's like, everyone should go see this.
Yeah, come see my movie. Yeah.
Yeah, everyone come see my movie.
Yeah, so now I can be like, yeah, go see my cousin's movie.
Exactly.
And afterwards, yeah, I called you to tell you how great it was for both as a movie and also to see you in it. And that's when we got to talking for like 3 hours.
Yeah, it was a long phone call.
It was a long phone call. And then in the middle of it, we were both like, hey, remember that podcast idea?
Yeah. And I was super stoked about it because a lot of people who know me know that that's kind of a thing that I do is I'll be like, hey, I have this idea, or like, hey, I'm working on this thing. And then I'll immediately jump to something else. And if someone doesn't keep me in check, I'll completely lose track of it. So I was really happy that you re-brought it up.
Yeah.
because I would have totally just been like, it just escaped my mind. But I think it's a fantastic idea, and here we are doing it. Can you tell me and the listeners, we're called the Cousin Paradox. That's the name of our show here. Why is that the name? We pitched some names back and forth. Me some really stupid ones. You some really smart ones. And then you settled on this name and pitched it to me, and I thought it was brilliant. Can you explain why this is the name of the show?
Yes. So in special relativity, which is, it basically describes how time and space work. There is a thought experiment called the twin paradox. And in the twin paradox, so have you seen the movie Interstellar?
I will pretend that I have. I've seen chunks of it. I watched a lot of the pieces of it on YouTube that are clips that are up. but I know a good amount about it. And when people ask me, I say yes, but I still haven't watched the whole thing.
You don't even have to, if you just get a summary of what happens, that suffices to know what I'm going to be talking about.
Yes.
Which is basically a lot of Interstellar deals with something called time dilation, which is where when you travel at speeds close to the speed of light, time moves really weirdly compared to how someone on Earth would see you moving. So, for example, in Matthew McConaughey, he's the main character. And when he leaves Earth and his daughter is a kid, and then because he's traveling at such high speeds, time moves really weirdly for him. And in the end, when he comes back to Earth, she is now an old woman. And so,
is still roughly the same age.
Exactly. And so that just kind of goes to show how time behaves in a relative case. So for him, time is moving normally. For the daughter, time is moving normally. But when you put them together, they experience time differently. And so what the twin paradox says, this thought experiment, is if you have a pair of twins and one of them gets on a rocket and juts out to, I don't know, another star at the speed of light, or not the speed of light, but something close to the speed of light, and then they come back home. So there's like kind of two ways to think about it. The first is that because the one twin has been traveling at close to the speed of light, even though they're twins, they were born at the same time, one is going to be significantly younger than the other. And another way, the more formal definition of the twin paradox is like, oh, well, like if he's traveling to another star, then he's traveling back, then like would the time affect him differently and would they be moving weirdly? It's a little more complicated, but I think that for right now, we can just suffice to say, like, if you have twins and one is moving at the speed of light or close to it, how are they still twins if one ages differently than the other?
Whoa.
And so it's very fun. I hope
that doesn't happen to some. It's like, congratulations, you have twins. One of them is moving at the speed of light and the other one is here.
Yeah.
So have fun with that.
Have fun with that.
Well, okay, and so we're the Cousin Paradox because we're cousins. It's a little play on words.
Yes.
And we did, we grew up at the same time, but, roughly at the same time. I'm a little older than you. But, I think it was brilliant because it's like, you know, we were raised by two different sets of parents and grew up very differently, but we're still, you know, related and we still have a lot of the same DNA. Grew up in New Jersey. Yeah. Hell yeah. Shout out to New Jersey. We love New Jersey.
Love New Jersey.
But yeah, so I think it's a really, really brilliant and fun name. And it sort of encapsulates the whole idea of what this show is, which is brilliant from your end and fun from your end, but just fun from my end because I'm a moron. But speaking of me being a moron and you being brilliant, what gives you the qualifications to talk about the science that you just spewed? What are your qualifications, Julia? Because I certainly have qualifications to talk about the movies that I haven't seen, like Interstellar. But what are your qualifications?
This is going to be awful for my ego. It truly does not need to be any bigger.
We want to hear it. We want to know.
So I got my bachelor's from Case Western Reserve University in Cleveland. I got one in astronomy. And then because astronomy and physics are so intertwined, They basically gave me a free one for physics. Like, oh, you basically did all the physics requirements.
Sure, why not?
Get a physics one. And I said, okay. And then so after I finished that was in 2020, I started graduate school at Georgia State University, where I'm currently in my fourth year. And I am getting my PhD in astronomy. And a couple years ago, along the way, I got my master's in physics with an astronomy concentration. So that's kind of the scene so far. How about you, Josh?
Well, I started doing commercials when I was 4 years old, and I then did some movies, and I did some more commercials, some voiceover work here and there. You can look it up on my IMDb. By the way, this is the exact same level of brilliance and hard work and dedication as what you've done. I'm just saying my voiceover work that I rolled out of bed and went into a studio in my shorts and t-shirt, equal to getting your PhD in astronomy and physics. And I studied improv for about, I still study improv, you always can, but I took classes at Upright Citizens Brigade, the People's Improv Theater here in New York City. I now teach at the People's Improv Theater. So I've been doing some stand-up improv. I've been an actor since I was a kid. So those are my qualifications for what I will be talking about. But that's neither here nor there, because the whole point of this show and podcast is to is because I've always been really interested in science as something that felt not attainable. And it's always been so, for lack of a better word, big. It's big and it's scary, and space is terrifying in a beautiful way. And it's something that, I was the type of kid to like sit with my friends in the backyard and look up at the stars and be like, you know, when you're looking at the stars, you're not actually seeing anything that's really there. You're seeing what was there 3 billion years ago, because it takes that long for the light to travel from there to here. And they'd be like, shut the fuck up. I'm having an existential crisis. We're 16. And so that was, I love watching any kind of documentary I can sink my teeth into about space, or about like the Voyager missions, or the Apollo missions, or any one of these little things. I'll just watch little documentaries on YouTube or whatever it is. And it's just something that I find really interesting, but I feel like as a person who's just interested in it, I can relate to a lot of people who are interested but feel like it's hard to digest and it's hard to understand. And we're here to help make that a little easier by me being the representative for the average person who has no idea what the hell you're talking about but thinks it's really cool, and you being our lovely, wonderful teacher and guide and helping explain these things to us in a really fun and cool way. Fun and cool. That's who we are. We're fun and cool.
Yeah, we're fun and cool. That's our thing.
Yeah, I mean, this is also just a mission that's really important to me. And when you encounter, I speak very broadly, when I encounter other astronomers, because it is my job to do so, everyone loves outreach and talking to others and communicating this love for science and the cosmos. And it's lucky that with astronomy, it feels like everyone else wants to learn about it. It seems like it's so tailor-made for people to want to explain all these really fascinating aspects of space, and then for people to want to hear about it. And
I think the thing about it is that it's similar to, like I just said before, it's cool. Like,
it's cool. It's so cool.
It is. Yeah. It's something that feels like this thing is cool, and it's all around us, and it's our reality. And I think that's a thing that especially younger people are getting more behind, this idea that like, oh, we have one Earth and we have to take care of it, and the planets around us are our neighbors, and like these things are all, they all affect each other, and what's out there outside of here, because we're frankly destroying what's here, and we need to stop destroying what's here. But I think that's unfortunately, as things do, they fall on young people. I think this is just going to be a great place to like get educated and have some fun, learning about some of the things that are happening around us.
Yeah, I absolutely agree, and I hope that we really have a lot of fun doing this podcast. But speaking of learning about the things that are around us.
Yeah.
Did you know, Josh, that there is going to be a solar eclipse in just a couple of weeks?
What?
In the United States.
A solar what is happening where?
A solar eclipse.
Oh, wow. Okay. That, I, you know, it's crazy. I didn't know that until right now. That's, I had no idea. But since you brought it up, why don't we talk about it a little bit?
Well, great idea.
Well, so let me give you my, real quick, what I think, I'm pretty sure,
yeah,
a solar eclipse is.
Sure.
All right, so we're here. We are, you know, we're little old us on Earth, and every so often, the moon just takes a little ride, in between us and the sun, and chills in front of the sun for a few minutes, and blocks out the sun, and then just keeps going. Is that like a little basic definition of what happens?
That's the basic definition. You got it. Yeah.
Cool. All right. Podcast is over. Thank you guys so much. We just talked about solar eclipse. Yeah. Well, let me ask you a question then. It seems so nominal, right? It's just a thing that's happening. Why? What is the significance of this?
So solar eclipses, I think part of the significance is that they're relatively rare. So even though the last one in the United States was about 7 years ago, having two in a decade is pretty unusual. And even the next one in the United States isn't going to be for another 20 years or so. Hmm. So I think kind of the rarity of that adds to it. And I would say it's one of those things where, you know, the sky totally darkens. For at least a total solar eclipse, which is when the moon is completely obscuring the sun. There are partial eclipses where the moon kind of grazes it or partially covers the sun. And that's cool to look at, but you don't get kind of the full effect. So I think it's just this really fascinating phenomenon where everything kind of goes dark. It gets noticeably cooler, temperature-wise, like outside.
Yeah. No, I think it just gets cooler. Also, it's interesting because everything goes dark for me a lot. I don't know if that has to do with the solar eclipse or just in general in life. Just like everything goes dark
for me. Could it be the narcolepsy, potentially?
You know what? I think it might be. That could be what it is. I should probably go get that checked out. a question about it. Because I prepared questions, but this one just came to me right now.
Yeah.
Might be kind of a dumb question, but no. This is the point of this,
That's
right?
The point.
So there, you said there's partial solar eclipses and then total solar eclipses. Isn't it always both? It just depends on where you are?
No? So a partial eclipse can happen and there's no total solar eclipse component to it. Where
even if you're just somewhere that you could see that? Because I thought that it's just depending on where you are.
No, so there are instances where even at your best location, the moon will not fully cover the sun and you'll get something partial. Those aren't as typically broadcast just because it's a little less interesting.
Because nobody cares. It's not that cool.
Nobody cares.
Nobody cares.
But so the reason why that happens is so you have the moon that is, of course, going in front of the sun. And you might think that so because the moon goes in front of the sun, you might think that this should be a more common occurrence just because the moon goes around Earth, the Earth goes around sun. Surely the moon should kind of block things out a little more frequently, especially because that's the definition of a new moon, is that you have the sun and then you have the moon and then you have Earth in more or less in a row. And so it's like, well, why don't we see a solar eclipse every time there's a new moon that happens every month? And the key there is that the moon's orbit is actually tilted a bit. So you have the Earth going in a fairly flat circle, or not a circle, an ellipse around the sun, but it's going pretty flat.
How dare you say circle? This is we don't do circles here. We do ellipses here.
They're going to take me out and shoot me for saying a circle.
they're taking your PhD away.
But the moon is oriented at about a 5-degree incline relative to Earth. And so in instances where it might have the opportunity to pass in front of the sun, like during a new moon, it can either go over or under. And so in that case, we just don't see that eclipse at all. And that's also how you get partial eclipses, is if it, you know, clips it, but it doesn't kind of go the full way.
The partial eclipse is where it just clips?
It clips the sun.
It just eclipses.
Just a little bit.
Just a little baby eclipse.
Just a little bit.
Okay, I feel like lunar eclipses happen more often. Do they?
Do they? I don't.
Uh-oh, did I stump you with that question?
I forgot to look about lunar eclipses, or not lunar eclipses. I forgot to study those as much. I would say that
Well, that's for our listeners to look up.
That is for our listeners to look up. Yeah. I would say those, I feel like those still happen every few years or so. Okay. I think that it's easier to coordinate that because whereas you have to really position the moon very closely in front of this, or, you know, in front of the sun, with the moon, all it really needs to be doing is being blocked by Earth. And because the Earth is so much closer to the moon, it's so much bigger, it's easier to block that out. It's a little bit more common for that to happen.
Got it.
So if that makes sense.
Like, I guess so. I mean, I'm like, listen to me, none of this makes sense. I'm just saying okay and I'm nodding.
Because the moon, for a lunar eclipse to happen, that's the shadow of the Earth falling onto the moon.
And the Earth has a big fat ass.
The Earth has a fat ass. So it's much easier for that fat ass to cover the moon, whereas the sun also has an even fatter ass, but it's way further away. So it's much harder for that obscuration to happen.
Got it. Okay. So because the moon has a tiny little ass.
Yes.
It's rarer for it to get in between the sun's huge fat ass and the Earth's fat ass.
Yes. Got it. And the interesting thing about eclipses, even just kind of in general, is that the fact that we are able to see them is really pretty pure luck. Because,
oh, yeah?
Because just the like the fact that the size of the moon is basically equal to the how we see the size of the sun, given how far away it is, it doesn't have to be like that.
Oh,
it just so happens
that
it totally masks it out. And the reason why is because...
God. It's because of God.
It's because of God.
Okay, got it.
God who said that the sun is about 400 times larger than the moon, but it's also about 400 times farther away from Earth. And so, okay, so...
No, I get... No, I know I'm looking at you like you have three heads, but I'm actually just processing and being like, that's amazing.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. No, it didn't have to be like that, but it just so happened that proportionality worked out.
Does that have any effect? It's just an optical thing? Like, does they happen to be like that? I mean, I guess obviously if it was any further or any closer, it would affect everything. Temperature and gravity and whatnot. But I mean, it just happens to be this totally visually perfect thing that it fits right in between. Well, the moon is getting further away from Earth, right?
Yes. I was actually about to say. So there are various factors at play, like the distance from the Earth to the sun, and also the distance from the Earth to the moon. And those things are also on ellipses. They're not constant. So there are instances where you'll get something called an annular eclipse, which is when the moon does go totally in front of the sun, but because of the moon's distance from the Earth, it's a bit further away, it appears smaller, so it doesn't blot out the whole sun. Instead, it forms out like a ring. So that's another thing that can happen. That's called an annular eclipse.
Okay.
So you have kind of all of these various things that have to line up.
So you have solar eclipses, lunar eclipses, and anal eclipses.
Exactly.
Got it.
You got it.
Okay. I have a question.
Yes.
I have multiple questions, but I'm going to fire some at you here. Are there any tidal effects that happened during a solar eclipse? Like any, because of the, where the moon is? I mean, listen, they could be dumb questions, but I have no idea.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, are there any, like, wave, because I know the moon affects the waves.
Right.
It affects the tidal forces.
Right.
Or is it just happen to be just where it is in the sky? It has nothing to do with anything on Earth here.
So the position of the tides and how high or low they are does depend on the moon. And we're going to be seeing the solar eclipse at a high tide moment, at least depending on where that moon is. Because if you have the sun, tides from the sun, that's pulling on the water in line with the moon. That's also pulling on the ocean, pulling on the Earth. So that's going to kind of add up the tides in a way. Like you have the tidal force from the sun, the tidal force from the moon, and that's going to create a higher tide. It won't be like a special kind of high tide. It would be the same kind of high tide that you would see at any instance of a new moon, where the moon and the sun are tugging Earth in the same direction. And so that would create a higher pull, a higher force that would create a higher tide. So, so nothing particularly special, but it will still be present.
Okay, so not the dumbest question in the world.
No, totally smart.
Okay, do you ever think like the moon just like gets tired of our shit?
Oh, all the time. I think it gets really tired of all the cheese jokes.
Yeah.
I think if I was the moon, and I was I'm like billions of years old, and I have been through space, and I'm just like really kind of like raw dog
hit with a lot of shit. Yeah.
Hit with a lot of shit. People are stepping on me, planting flags in my hole.
Just saying like, this is mine.
This is mine. And then they turned around and was like, yeah, I think the moon is made of cheese. I would be pretty pissed. I think I would be irate. I would feel disrespected. I would feel unloved. And if I was the moon, I would try to get out of this orbit, this relationship with Earth pronto. I would not stand for it at all.
Well, when will it fling itself out of our orbit and into deep space?
So that is not going to happen for probably another like billion years. So the moon.
Oh, right around the corner.
Yeah, right around the corner.
Yeah.
The moon is moving, I think it's a couple inches per year away from Earth. And that's
still
just
more than I thought it would be.
I think it's a couple inches. It's pretty tiny.
Well, okay. Are we talking like 2 inches? Are we talking like 5 inches? I mean, come on.
Come on.
No, but still, I was thinking it would be like centimeters or millimeters. I mean, that adds up. That's you know, in 10, 20 years, that's some feet. No, you know, that's getting further and further away. But I guess it's still in Earth's orbit enough that it's not gonna fling itself out.
Right. Yeah. It wouldn't be a fling. It would be a very slow drift apart.
Yeah. Kind of like every relationship I've ever
every
had.
Every relationship. Yeah. Very slow drift. And eventually it would be free of us. And at which point eclipses couldn't happen anymore. There's even going to be a point where it's still within Earth's orbit, but it would just be too small for it would appear too small to us for a solar eclipse because it would move so far away.
It would just be like a little circle,
just a little
passing in front. Yeah,
just
yeah.
A little dot, a little sad dot. And so, yeah.
So you can look famously when He Who Must Not Be Named looked at a solar eclipse. I know it can be very dangerous. So let's. I want to talk about that for a second for anybody who's listening that's like, ooh, I'm going to stare at the solar eclipse. When can you look? When should you not look? And why is it more dangerous than usual?
Yeah. So, yeah, the crazy thing about Trump. So there's that picture of him squinting at the sun. He was literally just looking at the sun. Like, again, raw dogging it. No protection at all. Just straight up looking at the sun. And even though it was during an eclipse that he did that, So you would not want to look at an eclipse unless you are looking at a total solar eclipse. That's to say the moon is fully covering the sun during totality. That's the part where it, you know, the full obscuration happens. Because if you look at the sun in any other context, even if it's like 99% covered, even if it's some form of annular eclipse or partial eclipse, you are going to seriously, seriously injure your eyes. And many people have done that and gone blind. And so there's always a big push kind of around eclipses to be aware of eye safety. Because, yeah, it's easy to look at an eclipse, you know, even during totality, it's so pretty. And then the moon moves away, the sun starts shining again in its full force, and there you are, you're looking at the sun. And so it is extraordinarily dangerous for your eyesight to be looking at the sun in that way. So you want to make sure that you have eclipse glasses if you do plan to look at the eclipse in any way, even if, again, if, you know, if it's total solar eclipse. You want to make sure that you have certified eclipse glasses. If you want to find out where to get some, a website that I recommend is, I think, eclipse.aas.org. That is AAS. That's the American Astronomical Society. They have a lot of good recommendations.
We're totally unsponsored. This is our first episode, but we're just shouting them out.
AAS, if you want to pay for my membership, I will thank you. You can do that. You can do that. No questions asked.
Yeah. Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Yeah, so and so eclipse glasses are really important because they have a very strong filter on them, and they would let you look at the sun even if it's not fully obscured, but it's such strong filtering that you would not be hurting your eyes.
Can you use them even when I guess that I'm sort of answering my own question, because totality is the only time where you can just look up.
Yes.
Without them.
Yes.
So you should wear the glasses, and then you can look up as much as you want.
Yes.
At it as it's happening with the correct eye protection on.
Correct. Yes. Cool. Yeah. So yeah.
Is it like a stronger? Is it because the moon is partially blocking it? It's like shining brighter? Because I think many people have, either at some point or another, accidentally or looked up at the sun as it is in the sky.
Yeah.
And is this more dangerous than that?
Not necessarily. It's still the same sun. It's not brighter or more dangerous in certain forms of light. It's just that you're looking at
you
the
may
sun.
Glance up at the sun by accident, but this one, the whole point is you're looking up.
Exactly.
So you're like, ooh, let me stare.
Exactly.
Blast your eyeballs out of the back of your head.
Exactly, because you don't want to miss what's going on. And yeah, so yeah. The kind of moral of the story there is just if you're going to view the eclipse, which you should if you have the ability to, because it's really a once, twice in a lifetime opportunity, just be safe and make sure that you err on the side of caution. Because it would really suck if the last thing that you saw was a really pretty ball of some gas, and then that was it.
And then that was it. It's over.
Yeah.
Are there solar eclipses on other planets?
Great question. Yes, there are. So you have, if we kind of go outwards from the center of our solar system, our two inner planets, Mercury and Venus. They don't have any moons, so we can just kind of throw that. Earth, here we are. Mars does have two moons, but they are pretty small. They wouldn't eclipse it. And then you go into our outer planets. So Jupiter and Saturn, it's hard to get a sense of an eclipse from the surface because they don't have a surface. They're gas giants. But like, let's say you were on what was functionally the surface in some kind of spaceship. Yeah, they have some larger moons. And so, for example, on Jupiter, some of the larger moons include Ganymede.
Europa?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's crazy, yes.
I know Europa.
Yeah. Even, I think, Io and Callisto. Those are some of the larger moons in the solar system. So, in theory, they could be viewed at a solar eclipse in a solar eclipse way. And what's also really interesting about those moons specifically is they're in resonance, which means that for every one orbit, I forget like the order, but like for every one orbit that one of those moons does, the other moon does two and the other moon does four. So like they're all kind of rotating, or sorry, they're all orbiting.
You can you get an eclipse while you're on one of the moons of another moon in front of the sun?
You theoretically could. Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Which is pretty sick.
Sorry. Finish what you were saying. So they're all in resonance. So one will go around.
So So what I was originally going to say was if you were on the surface of Jupiter, you could, in theory, get like a three-way eclipse potentially.
Whoa.
It does work
out. It's almost a full orgy of an eclipse.
A full orgy. Just going full ham.
Yeah.
And then when you have,
that's pretty crazy.
It is really crazy. And then for the outer planets, Uranus and Neptune, so they do have moons. And at that point, the sun is looking pretty small because it's so far away. And so in theory, again, you would be able to see eclipses from those planets.
Cool.
So we are not the only planet that could view an eclipse, which is really neat.
Okay, I have one here.
Yeah.
Which phase of the moon do you think is just like the most emo?
Oh, okay. It would have to be, I think, a third or fourth quarter. So that's when it's like half in shadow, half not. Because it's got kind of like the emo hair swish.
Yeah.
The Pete Wentz.
The Pete Wentz, if you will.
The Pete Wentz, if you will. And it's very much like, you know, I want to show myself. I kind of don't. But like, I want you to ask me about it.
Yeah, look at me. I'm just, what? I'm a troubled moon.
I'm just a troubled moon. So I think definitely one of those.
Is that waxing or waning? Or those are just words that I have in my head.
No, that's good. Yeah. So waxing is first quarter when it's like on its way to being a full moon. And then waning is it's in the other direction. Now it's past full and now it's kind of getting dark again. It's going to be a new moon. So, cool. Yes.
Okay. And I think the last question to wrap up our eclipse questions here. Where are the best places for our listeners, all seven of them throughout the country that we have right now, in our first episode? Who's going to get the best view of this solar eclipse? And this will get a partial eclipse?
Yeah, most of the United States will get at least a partial eclipse, which is awesome, because it's just really nice when you get something that like completely goes across the country. So in terms of there's a lot of major metropolitan areas that are going to be covered by this eclipse. For example, I will be watching from Austin, Texas. You can also get it in Houston,
Shout out
Texas.
To our Austin, Texas listeners.
Shout out to Austin.
We love you in Austin.
We love you in Austin. You will also see it in Cleveland and in Buffalo, New York. So it's going to kind of take that trail. Which is super great. But actually, before we move on, I did want to tell you another thing about the eclipse.
Okay, please.
Which is like what you're actually seeing. When you look at a total solar eclipse, what are you looking at? Because I think a lot of people have seen the pictures where when it's fully covered and there's like a kind of a wispy sort of...
Yeah, like rings of... Or like a ring of like... Like the froth that you get on the top of your cappuccino at
a it's
Starbucks.
Like a frothiness.
Yes.
And what is that? So that is the outer layer of the sun called the corona. So you have the core of the sun, which is where the energy is produced and that gets radiated outwards. You have the surface of the sun that's called the photosphere. And like when you look at the sun, like that's the layer of the sun that you're looking at. This is where you see sunspots. This is just kind of where, that's the surface of the sun functionally. But then you have this outer, much less dense layer called a corona. And the corona extends really far out from the surface of the sun, as you can see in pictures of eclipses. And the rings and the wispiness is controlled by the magnetic fields of the sun, which are super chaotic and they can vary greatly. And actually one of my favorite things about the sun is something called the corona heating problem. Which is
When you leave your six pack in the sun for too long. Yeah.
And it starts to sweat.
Gets gross.
It gets nasty.
Nasty, yeah. But then you pop a lime in it, you drink it anyway, and you have a good time.
And you have the best time you can have, which is not very good.
Right.
So if we just think like very basics about heat, imagine, I don't know, you're at a campfire.
Yep.
When you're close to the fire, you're really warm. It's toasty. When you move away from the fire, it gets colder. That's just like human 101. That's caveman knowledge.
Sure. Yeah. I knew that.
Dumbing it down for you.
I knew that. Okay.
Yeah. But the corona is super fascinating because even though it is an outer layer of the sun, it is far from the core. What happens when you enter that layer is it shoots up in temperature to millions of degrees. So you have kind of the core of the sun is millions of degrees. And then as you go outwards, it cools off. And then on the surface of the sun, it's about 5,000-6,000 degrees. And then you move further away from the core of the sun where the energy is from this fire. And the temperature shoots up, like skyrockets. That's like going further away from the fire and suddenly getting like burn up and combustion.
Interesting.
And so it's called the coronal heating problem. And nobody, I don't want to say nobody. I mean, this is something that's been known for a really long time that people have been working on. But, like, astronomers don't really know why it happens. So that's something that kind of they're studying. And it's important for understanding space weather and what's going on. But I just think it's, like, really fascinating because
it seems
it's like such a simple, not a simple problem, but it's so, it doesn't require a lot of jargon to understand what's going on. Like just far
totally,
equals hot.
It doesn't totally make sense, but it happens.
But it happens. Yeah. So that is, I think that's super fascinating.
That is really cool. Since the sun is a bajillion degrees, and as you go further away, it gets cooler, and then you move a little further away, and it gets hotter again.
Yeah.
But then you keep going further away. Does that mean, by definition, by default, there has to be somewhere in that space between, if you made it a physical space, where it's like 80 degrees?
Yeah, where it's just like a cool summer day.
Yeah, somewhere in the vacuum of space.
Yes.
Between the sun and... What is Venus the first planet or is Mercury the first planet?
Mercury.
I knew that. between the sun and Mercury, there's some spot that's like 80.
Yeah. You would do 80 great.
80 Fahrenheit.
So you would do great if you had like a little parasol. You would die immediately.
The radiation.
From the radiation.
Yeah, I was going to say the radiation would just melt your cells.
Yeah.
Which I only realized as soon as you said you would die immediately. I was like, oh, never mind.
It would be like a cover for like a Goosebumps novel, right? Where they have like the skeletons, but they're like on the beach or something. They're like enjoying.
Yeah, they're dancing. They're doing they're doing a jig.
Yeah, that would be you.
Yeah. Well, I want to move on to our next segment here after we've talked about the moon, which is we decided to watch a movie that we were going to talk about. This week, and it's a movie about space. It's a movie about the moon.
Yes.
And it's a movie about family.
Yes.
Which I think are things that really define our relationship to each other. And this is the 2010 animated classic Despicable Me.
The one and only.
The one and only Despicable Me. What a brilliant movie. Watching it again, I realize this movie is so funny.
It's weird. Okay, so I'm going to be honest. I did watch it on 2x speed.
This is the most Gen Z shit I've ever heard.
Because I feel like Despicable Me over the last... It came out in 2010, so almost 15 years ago.
Yeah.
It's so ubiquitous. Right, you see the first. It's like it's hard to imagine a world without Minions.
Yeah,
anymore. Yeah. And when they when they first started to like make their first little squeak, that's when I was like, oh no, I forgot what I'd gotten myself into.
Dude, so I need to cut you off for half a second.
Yes.
Only because I remember seeing the movie in theaters. I saw it with some of my close friends, what my best friend in the world, Rishi, we saw it together, and I remember we left that theater and we were like, the Minions are the funniest thing that have ever existed. Because think about it, the rest of the Minions lore hadn't existed yet.
Sure.
We just saw this movie. Sure. And we were like, this is brilliant.
Yes.
It's hilarious. It's childish, but it's also really smart and goofy and silly. And I was personally put in the nostalgia seat of right back there being like, I remember why the Minions are amazing.
They're so clever. It's such a simple and effective execution.
Yeah.
It's truly amazing. But so how do you feel about it now? Kind of watching it back, how do you feel about the Minions looking back on it?
I still feel really good about the Minions. I feel good about the future of the Minions. I think they're going to have, I think Minion stock up. I think I think Minions to the top. Like I said, for nostalgia's sake, I still loved it. It still cracked me up. I understand why people are like, please. I can't. I mean, they have in LA at City Walk at Universal, they have the giant Minion that's looking over and watching over all of Hollywood. Yeah, you have to look it up. It's a giant eye. It's a giant Minion eye, like a god just looking down upon his disciples, which is just Hollywood, and like Culver City or Studio City. It's so funny. The Minions have just exploded to a level that is unheard of, but unseen before. But I still find it really funny. I have to be completely honest with you.
Yeah.
I was watching it on my couch and I fell asleep right when he stole the moon. And I woke up right when the moon got big again. And I was like, I could go back and rewatch this and see if they talk about the moon being stolen and its effects on Earth. But I just don't want to go back and rewind the last 10 minutes. See, so
yeah, that's the great thing about Despicable Me is you can fall asleep for half the movie and not miss anything.
Yeah. I have no response. Yeah, you're right. You can. I will say I do love it was so sweet when the one when the little girl loses her unicorn toy.
Yes.
And the Minion comes in with the one that he made of the toilet brush.
Yeah.
And he's like, "Bye boy." And she's like, "It's beautiful." And she like snuggles with it. I'm like, "That's cute."
That's pretty cute.
That was really sweet. Well, okay, science question though.
Yes.
If the moon was stolen?
Yes.
If somebody had a shrink ray,
yes,
and went up and said, "This is mine." And brought the moon back down to Earth as a little rock.
Yes.
What would happen? And how quickly would it happen?
So the good news is there wouldn't be like an imminent doom of, you know, the moon suddenly disappears. We're all going to die. It wouldn't be an immediate death. It would probably be a much slower death.
Okay.
Because, so a few of the things that would happen on the short term is, so something that, you know, they allude to in the movie is that the tides change, right? Because the moon controls the tides. And in reality, so the sun also has influence on the tides. And just compared to how close the moon is, so the moon has a much stronger influence. But if the moon were to disappear, there would still be tides. It would just be significantly less strong. It would suck to go surfing. It wouldn't be fun anymore.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. So on a short term, surf that would
down.
Occur.
Surf is down. Not up. Surf's down.
Surf's down.
Minions up, surf down.
Minions up, surf's down.
Sell surf stock. God, I can't even say it. Sell surf stock. Buy Minion.
Buy Minion. So that would happen. Another thing that would happen would be a lot of change in just kind of the general biodiversity of Earth, because you have so many animals that rely on moonlight, nocturnal animals, or other animals that otherwise kind of rely on the lunar cycle for just general functions. Like, for example, like turtles, when they hatch from their eggs, they follow the moon, and that leads them to the ocean.
You have turtles just fucking going crazy. You have turtles just waddling.
Going crazy.
Crazy. We got turtles going buck wild.
So if the moon were to disappear,
what's a wolf going to howl at? What's a wolf going to howl at?
What's it going to howl at?
What's it supposed to howl at?
What's it supposed to howl at? Now we just got to howl out a stupid sign, a neon sign.
Right, exactly. The North Star? You're going to howl at the North Star?
Yeah, no. Right.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, right.
Okay, so biodiversity is screwed.
Yeah.
The tides are temporarily they are permanently weird. Yes. But the sun still has an effect.
Yes. So in the immediate short term, I would say the things that are most damaged by the moon's disappearance would probably be the animals. They would be getting pretty fucked over.
Okay.
And then by extension, humanity through, I guess, like the food chain and stuff like
and
that.
And turtles everywhere.
Turtles everywhere. They just don't know where to go. Mm-mm. So that would be kind of, I think, a short-term effect. And even just the tides changing ocean patterns, and the tides, I think, help regulate aspects of the atmosphere, not in a way that would make it unbreathable, but just in terms of climate.
Sure.
So that would play into things a bit. On a much longer scale, what the moon would do, or what a lack of a moon would do, so the moon stabilizes the Earth's tilt. The Earth is tilted at about 23 degrees off like a vertical axis.
Got it.
And so the moon kind of helps to regulate and stabilize that. And so if the moon were to vanish over a period of a very long time, again, not immediately, but probably in the thousands to tens of thousands of years range, maybe even longer, just the Earth's axis would kind of go a bit wild. It might go straight up. It might tilt to be horizontal. It would be very unregulated.
Horizontal Earth sounds cool.
That would be pretty cool.
Yeah. If the Earth went horizontal,
yes,
would certainly the ice caps would melt, right?
It depends on which pole, because whatever side,
that's a good point.
Whatever. So if you have an Earth that was sideways,
right?
Whatever side is, and it's presumably pointed towards the sun.
But it is spinning still. Oh no, it'd be spinning.
It would be spinning like a hot dog.
Right, it'd be spinning like a hot right. Hot dog Earth.
Like, yes. So whatever side of that hot dog is facing the sun would be really hot. Whatever side is pointed away, it would be very cold. And so it would become a very
we would have a dark side of the Earth.
Yes, there would be a dark side of the Earth functionally.
Ah. So would it maybe become like frozen on half of that side of the Earth, and the other side would be a billion degrees?
Yeah, pretty
much.
Not
a billion, but certainly a few hundred.
So there would just be one really gentrified strip in the middle. That
right, exactly. Yeah, just right down the middle. That's like the cool zone.
That's like 70 degrees sunny.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
In the center of the hot dog.
In the center of the hot dog. So it would be very unpleasant. So, yeah, that would just in general. Changing the Earth's axis would cause a lot of climate instability, which is, of course, bad for many reasons. So for the long term, stuff would suck.
Yeah.
But
okay.
But that was kind of the funny thing when I was doing this.
Yeah, way less catastrophic than I thought it would be. Well, sorry, go on.
Yeah, no. Yeah, it is way less catastrophic, at least, yeah, like in the short term. But yeah, really, the only things that get fucked up really immediately from what I could tell was really the animals. So if Gru has a vendetta against the animals, he's got that covered. But like if his goal is to conquer humanity, reign supreme, shitty plan.
Shitty plan. Okay.
If you, Josh, had a goal of becoming a supreme overlord, engaging in shenanigans or mischief, what would your plan of action be?
Well, first off, I'm stealing hearts. I'm not stealing the moon. I'm stealing hearts.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm gonna cut a bunch of people open and take their hearts. Okay. And become heart. I'm gonna become heart king.
Heart king.
Heart king, king of the hearts. Yeah. I think my plan would be to steal the hearts of people by being a gentle, wonderful, silly, kind leader. And I'd kill them with kindness. I'd win everybody over by being a nice sweetie pie. That's my big to-do on how I'm taking over the earth. I'm doing it right now, Julie. I'm starting here with this podcast. Over the earth with goofiness and silliness.
I'm honored to be a part of your ascent.
Yeah, it's you and I. We're gonna do this together.
Together. But obviously.
I'll run the earth wing and you run the space wing of our supreme leadership.
I can
of the
do
planet.
Space Force.
You're in charge of Space Force. All right, so to wrap things up, unless you have any further, do you have any further questions? I'm just feeling
not further questions, but I did do a little bit of math to figure. So,
some maths.
So what they do with the shrink rays, right? They shrink the moon, and with the moon, they also kind of shrink the mass, like, which is one of the reasons why shrink rays can't exist for many reasons, but like. What they make the moon lightweight, like they can play with the moon, they can hold it, blah blah blah. So it no longer weighs this enormous mass. It's now like the weight of a ball.
Right.
But if they had gone the route of shrinking the moon to the size of a baseball, but keeping its mass, so it still was the moon, you could ask the question: would this form a black hole? Because.
Whoa.
If you have, that's how a black hole forms. If you compress enough mass into some point or some area, that can form a black hole. And so I was like, oh, wouldn't that be cool if they went that route and maybe formed a black hole? The unexciting answer is it would not form a black hole.
Shit!
With the moon's mass, it would need to be about 1/20th of a millimeter in size.
Of like its exact same mass, but 1/20th of a millimeter.
Yes, which is about 750 times the size of the baseball that they did shrink it to. So if they shrunk it down another 1,000 times, they would get a black hole, and that would be pretty bad. But even at the density that it would be shrinking the moon to a baseball, that would be about the density of a neutron star.
Would that cause the Earth to just absolutely collapse inwards towards the baseball moon?
Yeah, you would. So if you touched that moon, you would be, I wouldn't even say flattened, you would be eviscerated. You would feel so again, I rudimentary calculation, 3 with 15 zeros behind it is times the gravity of Earth is what you would feel if you were basically touching that baseball black. So 3
would
zero,
everything
zero,
start
zero,
to
yeah
would all, would the Earth and I almost said the moon would the Earth and planets and the sun would everything start to with the gravity of that baseball moon just throw the entire orbits of all the planets and everything completely out of whack?
It would throw a lot out of whack. It's hard to say because even though that the moon compressed into that is massive, but the gravitational influence of it is still limited to whatever the moon's so the compression doesn't change how much influence gravitationally it has versus just the regular moon. So like, for example, what I mean is if you have the moon operating right now as it is, cool. If you were to replace the moon with this baseball that had the same mass as the moon, so again, this is basically a neutron star, everything would still be exactly the same because the gravitational influences only depend on the mass of the object. And it doesn't depend so much on the distribution of that mass, whether it is extraordinarily concentrated or very diffuse.
So you couldn't even hold it on Earth because it would just, like, it would just...
Yeah.
It would be, it would collapse the whole planet inwards because it'd be so heavy.
Yeah, Earth would be fucked, but it wouldn't do something like disrupt the other planets.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah.
Good to know.
Yeah.
Baseball moon.
Baseball moon.
Baseball moon. Well, I'm really glad that you brought that up. I want to ask, if you were going to rate Despicable Me, what kind of rating would you give Despicable Me now upon watch again as an adult?
I think I would. So the sun is a type G5 star. It is a yellow lad, as we all know. Not technically, it's actually not yellow, but we can say for our purposes that it is yellow.
It's a yellow lad.
And in keeping with the spirit of the Minions, I think I would rate this maybe 2.5 type G5 stars.
Okay, I like that.
What would you rate it?
Well, so first off, great rating. I think that's apt. I think it's perfect.
Thank you.
If I was going to rate this movie, I think I would give it 4.5, and the half being it's sliced in half.
Yeah.
4.5 minions in spacesuits. And that's my rating. It's 4.5 minions in like astronaut spacesuits, including one of the minions is sliced in half. And I don't know if it's laterally or horizontally. I think I'm picturing it horizontally.
Very, very apt rating, my liege.
Thank you so much, my fellow supreme ruler of Earth.
Wow. Well, I think that makes for a very comprehensive rating between the two of us.
Yes, I think so too. I think that's a great way of wrapping up our first episode.
Yes,
Our ratings for Despicable Me. Well, this has been a blast. We haven't discussed how we're going to wrap the show up, which is what's funny. If anyone's made it to the end of the episode, now we're sort of winging this. But I kind of like that. I had a really fun time. I think this has been a blast, and I can't wait to make more of these with you and talk more about space and learn more about what's going on outside of our planet and within our planet.
I totally agree. This has been so much fun. I'm so glad that we actually took the initiative to do this. And no matter how things progress in the future, I'm glad that we're at least trying it, which I think we owe to ourselves to at least try it. And thank you so much to everyone for tuning in.
You know, it's like whoever it is, if it's two of you, if it's 20 of you, if somehow this reaches thousands of people, especially if we make episodes and episodes and episodes down the line and people go back and listen to the beginning. This is the beginning of this journey. This is the beginning of our Voyager mission out to interstellar space. We have no idea where we're going, but we know we're going to keep going. We don't know who we're going to reach, but maybe we'll reach some people that'll learn some things and find some things and inspire some people, and make people laugh and just have a good time.
Yeah.
So I've had a great time, and I'll let you, wrap it up if you have anything else you want to add.
Yeah, no, I hope that whoever's listening, if you feel so inclined to tune in to our next episode, whatever it may be on, we have not yet decided that topic.
No, we have not.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to the series. And I'll see y'all next time.
Bye-bye.